Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Inside Out. I'm your host, Sheila Alexander Reed. My co-host, Dr. Nicole Cutts, is out on travel today. And I just want to say hi and hope you're out there enjoying this lovely, lovely day. If you're not familiar with Inside Out, we come to you each and every Tuesday at 2. And we like to look at life, everything from pop culture to politics through an LGBT lens. And today's show is no exception. An FYI, there's an event coming up that you need to know about. The DC Center, that's a DC LGBT center here in DC, will be hosting the annual Outright Festival August 1st through 3rd. And that festival draws celebrated LGBT authors, both local and from around the country, to participate in this event. One in particular, Martin Duberman, is headlining the event and will be reading from his new dual biography, Hold Tight Gently, Michael Callan, Essex Hemphill, and the Battlefield of AIDS. Hold Tight Gently chronicles the years before there was an effective treatment of HIV and AIDS, and he'll be joining us on the show a little bit later. Another significant part of the Outright Book Festival is the 2014 Center Black LGBT Writers Forum, and it's a celebration of the dynamic and diverse voices of Black LGBT writers. The attending writers and authors will discuss various topics, including the writer's creative process, the essential ingredients for success, and how to navigate in the world of publishing. They'll also read from their newest works, and this particular forum will be moderated by Wyatt O'Brien Evans, who just happens to be my guest in the studio today. How you doing, Wyatt?
Hey, Sheila.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm with the accomplished Sheila Alexander Reed.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Not sure
if I'm living up to it, but thank you. For those of you who don't know, Wyatt O'Brien Evans is a journalist, author, radio talk show host, public motivational speaker, voiceover instructor, talent, entertainer, actor, and entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Did I leave anything out?
You pretty much covered
it. All right. So for more than 25 years, Wyatt has been a journalist. His work has been featured in print and online media outlets, including the Huffington Post, Washington Post, Bellerico, and Baltimore Out Loud. As a journalist, he has researched and written extensively on LGBTQ intimate partner violence and abuse issues. These articles have been syndicated in numerous print and online media outlets. As well, Mr. Evans conducts seminars and workshops on intimate partner violence and abuse. Mm-hmm. He's also the author of Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage, which is a second in the series of Nothing Can Tear Us Apart. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And last but not least, he's also the host of The Woe Show on PapiChuloRadio.com.
Yeah.
I like saying that, PapiChulo. Like that. Mm-hmm. And that's Sunday nights at 9 p.m. So I think sounds like you're the accomplished one here, not me.
We try.
You're busy. You're busy. So first and foremost, why does the center need to have this Black Writers Forum as part of the bigger Outright Book Festival? Like, why is that necessary?
Sheila, that's a very good question. It is a recognition of, you know, the dynamic and diverse voices of Black authors, because we Black authors have enriched the LGBT genre as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And this gives us the opportunity to let everyone know the, what we're doing. So I'm glad the Outright Book Festival is doing that.
I think it's important also that that we tell our stories.
Right.
And it's so important because very often the LGBT community is portrayed in negative manner, not a positive manner. So you really can't count on anybody else to tell your story. So I think that's why it's personally important. And, you know, Black writers can't have their stories be told by white writers, or not solely, you know. So it's important that you have to be at the table, if you will. And so I'm glad you all are doing that. So this Outright Book Festival is celebrating one of our own, Mr. Essex Hemphill,
yes.
The late Essex Hemphill,
yes.
Arguably the most critically acclaimed and well-known contemporary openly gay African-American authors. So what do you see as the importance of celebrating Essex Hemphill here at this festival?
I am so glad you asked me that. First of all, Essex is a groundbreaker.
Did you know him?
Yeah, I did. We worked together in like 1984-85, and Essex is a groundbreaker. Without Essex, there would be no Elin Harris, no James Earl Hardy, no me, because you've got to put...
Those are contemporary writers.
Absolutely.
Gay Black writers.
Right, yeah, James Earl Hardy, mm-hmm. The B-Boy Blues series, and you mm-hmm. know, the famous Elin Harris. And you have to put the whole Essex thing in context, because in the 80s, very, very few publishers would touch the works of openly gay African-American authors. And Essex was the type of guy who would not take no for an answer. What he did was he self-published. In 85, he released Earth Life. Then in 86, he released Conditions, Selections of Poetry. So people took notice, publishers picked him up, and the rest is history. And he was a great guy. He was so motivated, and again, like I said, and so exceptionally talented. He was really, I think, before his time, he was also, as well as being an author and a poet, he was a performance artist.
Mm-hmm.
And without Essex, a lot of us would not be here today. So, yeah.
And isn't it also true that a lot of his work was, I don't want to say sexual, but, you know, erotica sometimes. Mm. And I know that, you know, he may have had a hard time getting published as a result of that. So when you say he went ahead and published it on his own, you know, that's mm-hmm. some kind of chutzpah there.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you touched on this too, Sheila, because in a way, he was the grandfather of erotica, but erotica wasn't, that was like the icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
He had, you know, he had the foundation, and the erotica was wrapped around it. And my novel, Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage, is gay, ethnic, and somewhat erotic. And even now it's hard for authors of erotica, even if it's not that heavy,
mm-hmm.
to get published, because people want to, you know, publishers kind of want to shy away from that. So Essex,
is it because it's erotica or because it's gay erotica?
Oh, wow. You're asking some good questions, aren't you? I think it's both. I think it's erotica, and then it's the gay erotica,
mm-hmm.
as well.
That's a whole nother you know, strike against it, if you will.
Yes, I agree.
So as a journalist, why are you so passionate about writing, putting a bright light on intimate partner violence and abuse? I was struck by that in your bio. So I was curious, and you also touch on that in the book, Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage. So what is it about intimate partner violence and abuse that makes you so passionate
about that,
about this subject, and why would you include it in your book?
Right. Well, first of all, intimate partner violence and abuse is domestic violence. Mm-hmm. The acronym for it is IPVA, and that's the overarching theme of Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage. Sheila, I'm so passionate about it because during my life, I have known individuals who have been physically and or emotionally, verbally abused, battered. So I'm very passionate.
By their partners?
By their partners.
Mm.
And so I'm very, very passionate about it. And as a journalist, my signature issue is IPVA. And I've written about it extensively for Huffington Post, Baltimore Out Loud, other media outlets. There needs to be a bright light shined on it because in our community, the LGBTQ community, it's underreported.
Definitely.
And it's heavily stigmatized. And each year, get this, each year, more than 50 to 100,000 lesbians and more than 500,000 gay SGL men are battered.
And now, SGL.
Single gender loving men.
Same gender loving, I believe.
Right, exactly.
Okay,
thank you,
you
for that. And one in every four LGBTQ relationships or partnerships are abusive in some way. So
One in four.
Mm. So
That's crazy. Crazy high.
It is crazy high. And I wanted to put that in book form because I felt that for some people, you know, being in novel form would make it more palatable.
Mm.
Although the impact is still, it's not diminished. The impact is still there.
Okay. So is it, well, you touched on it just now. So is it, you think it's more palatable if you don't just come out and perhaps do a self-help book on intimate partner violence versus this sort of fictional love story that turns ugly?
Oh, wow. You know what? I'm writing a self-help book now.
Huh.
Yeah. And I'm going to touch on IPVA. I just felt that it needs to be addressed in various forms. Me as a journalist writing articles and researching the articles and then putting it in novel form, because you're going to have a segment of people who read novels more than they read newspapers.
That's
or whatever.
True. So you want to reach people on different fronts.
Exactly. Reach as many people as possible.
Okay. So can we get a little excerpt of Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage?
Yeah. But let me first of all give you the 411 on Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage.
Okay.
First of all,
background story.
Exactly. This will be quick. First of all, it happens in Washington, D.C. in the present time. And Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage is about two openly gay masculine men of color. You have Wesley, who is this wealthy black entrepreneur and celebrity. And then you have Antonio. Antonio is his nickname. Antonio is his Latino chief of security. And they meet for the very first time when Wes is interviewing Antonio for that job. And instantly they have this combustible chemistry, intense burning, and they try to fight it, but along the way stuff happens to them, including a hostage situation.
Mm-hmm.
They fall deeply and profoundly in love. They admit it finally, and they form a monogamous relationship. And I want the listeners to understand that Rage is a story about love and not lust,
and not hate.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. And during their relationship, it's thrown into dire jeopardy with family issues, ethnic racial tensions, and some sexual issues. And then on top of that, there's this shadowy, deadly entity who has it in for Wes. He manipulates Tonio into falsely believing that Wes has been cheating. The upshot is that Tonio batters Wes. Wes kicks him to the curb. But that's not the end of Rage. A lot of other stuff happens with twists and turns. And the last three chapters are
If you do say so yourself.
Yeah, I'm the author. All right. So I should know.
So you're going to give us an excerpt. Is it going to be from the love portion of the book when they're getting together, or is it going to be more towards the rage portion of the book when they're starting to have the intimate partner violence?
I'm going to start with the love portion when they meet for the very first time.
Okay. All right. This is Wyatt O'Brien Evans, and he's reading an excerpt from his book, Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage.
Y'all, Antonio was a freaking sight to behold. A ruggedly handsome brick house, he was 6'4", 280 muscle, immense pounds. Massively built and exquisitely proportioned, he was hands down a bodybuilder's bodybuilder. Now, the stud was clad entirely in black, shirt, jazzy but tasteful tie, form-fitting jeans and designer cowboy boots. Masculinity with touches of sensitivity oozed out of him. Hey, I was freaking taken aback, which usually doesn't happen often. Mr. Kelly, it's a pleasure to meet ya. Tonio, my nickname for him, smiled broadly. That 100-watt grin could have lit up all of Washington, D.C. Now, immediately extending his power-packed mitt, the stud had this syrupy, so sensual low baritone with a full heaping helping of Latin accent stirred in for good measure. And his eyes, a liquid blue-green, they seemed to be as endless as an ocean, sucking you right in. They peered deep inside, searching for the real you. I swore they seemed to have a life all their own. Now, Tonio had a caramel-tinged complexion and short, curly jet black hair. His sideburns connected to a neatly trimmed goatee, which in turn merged into his stash. He had these full lips which begged you to kiss him. Kiss them. And his hand clasp, God, it was warm, supremely confident, well-manicured. Those hands were like meat cleavers, so thick, so sturdy, so powerful. His touch, his grasp made my whole freaking body tingle through and through. Nobody, and I do mean nobody, had touched me that way in what seemed like eons. I swallowed hard. And all of a sudden, that old magical thing called chemistry burst forth, spinning around, totally engulfing us. The sensation was electric, hard-hitting, exciting, and though downright scary. Hey, remember that song, Just Don't Disturb This Groove? Well, let me tell you, this was it.
All right.
You like
that? A lot of good imagery in that. I love it.
I love imagery.
So, and you know, it's so rare that I think our listeners get to hear, you know, about two gay men just falling in love. You know, it's not, you know, the thing that people have the problem with about the whole LGBT community is they think it's all, you know, nothing but sex. But it's love, it's pain, it's everything that everybody else goes through as well. And that's why I think it's important that these types of stories are read. And then we don't want to read just sort of the part when they're having issues, but the part when they're falling in love. So I think that was very sweet and very well done.
Let me just quickly comment on that. You're absolutely right. And that's why I created my own publishing company, Narrabo Universal, to publish this thing.
What is it called?
Narrabo Universal.
Narrabo, okay.
Thank you. To publish Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage, because I got some offers, but they couldn't wrap their heads around the whole masculine romance thing. And I just wanted to show a story of two masculine men, particularly of color, who could fall in love, first find out that they have similarities and likabilities, and mm-hmm. get to know one another, fall in love, and then the sex comes.
And that sort of dispels the myth that gay men are always effeminate as well.
Absolutely.
So I applaud you for that. That is awesome. So let me hear a little bit more about Nothing Can Tear Us Apart. Do you think that that's resonating with readers thus far? How long has it been out? Let me ask you that first.
It's been out since January.
Okay, so
mid-January.
So how's it doing?
It's doing better than I expected. I'm getting letters from men and women of all sexual orientations, be they lesbian, gay, straight, bisexual, transgender, because you see, Sheila, the universal theme of Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage, is simply this. You've got two individuals mm-hmm. who are profoundly and deeply in love, and they're fighting against the odds to nurture and maintain their monogamous relationship, and real life gets in the way. You know, the IPVA component, the ethnic racial tensions. You've got some
because one is black and one is Latino.
Right. Exactly, mm-hmm. coming from the friends and the family, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. There's some sexual issues involved, and also too, there are other things that are going on. So, it you know, it's resonating well, I believe, because of that universal thing.
Awesome. And I noticed that you touched a little bit on it, but I want to go a little bit deeper about the whole self-publishing piece. How hard is it to get published in the gay black writing world?
Oh, wow, Sheila.
Even if it's not erotica.
Right. Oh, first of all, it is harder today than it was 10 years ago to get published, period, even if you're white.
Okay.
And that's because the funds aren't there the way they used to be.
Hmm.
You know, money's tight. You have to really, it's hard for a new emerging artist. If you're an Oprah Winfrey or a Steve Hardy, it's much, much easier. So it's hard for an unknown aspiring author to get that deal.
And because it's a risk, I'm sure.
It's a risk.
Sounds like it's hard to get a loan these days.
Tell me about it.
That same type of thing where you have to have crystal clean credit.
Right.
And probably know somebody at the bank.
Exactly. Two people maybe.
Right, to get a loan. So it seems to me that more and more people should be self-publishing, you know, with the Amazons mm-hmm. of the world sort of out there and the internet playing a bigger part in sales.
And it's even harder for African-American artists to African-American inspiring authors to get published, and it's even harder still for gay.
Right, so it's a niche within the niche.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and it's going to be even harder for if you're doing erotica, because what threw publishers off with me is I've got three genres. I've got the gay, the ethnic, and the erotica, and they're saying, what can we do with you? We would love for you to be totally gangsta lit. And I'm not that, even though...
Gangsta lit?
Gangsta lit, meaning...
Is that a genre?
That's a genre, meaning pimps and what
pimps
have you.
Pimps and hoes.
Yeah, and all that good stuff.
Okay, interesting.
You know, and I wasn't going there. You know, I wanted more sophistication and all of that good stuff. So it's hard, and it's particularly hard for African-American gay authors to get that book deal.
I can understand that. It's probably even harder for... Well, maybe not probably, but it's I would guess, you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, that it's hard for a black lesbian author as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's as hard for the black gay author
mm-hmm.
as it is for the black lesbian author.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, like you said, you got a niche within a niche within a niche.
Within a niche, and you got three or four strikes against you.
Exactly.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about the panel that you're going to be moderating at the Outright Book Festival.
Great. It is the D.C. Center Black LGBT Writers Forum.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, it's good that we're having this because it's a celebration and recognition of the diverse and dynamic voices of black authors. And I'm proud to be the moderator this year. And what we're going to do, we've got this great panel of authors. We've got Cheryl Head, Rashid Darden, we've got Michelle Sewell, we've mm-hmm. got Buddha Desmond. Shout out to all you guys. And what we're
so those local authors?
Yes.
Okay.
They're all local authors. I believe they are, yeah. Yeah, most of them are, mm-hmm. at least. And what we will do, we'll read from our latest works to give people a flavor of what we do. And we're going to entertain exciting questions from the audience. We're going to talk about the writer's process, how to get published, and how to stay committed.
Mm.
You know, how to really do this from beginning to end.
What is the writer's process, if you don't mind me asking?
Let me first give you tips for aspiring authors. So many aspiring authors come to me saying, how can I do this, yada, 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 yada. First thing, you have to be committed. You have to make it a priority. You have to write almost every day, if not every day. You've got to select a completion date and pretty much stick to it. You've got to nurture your craft. Take grammar lessons, if courses if need be. Take writing workshops. Mingle with other aspiring authors and
you can't
read.
Just sit down and,
oh, no.
and do it.
It's not going to write itself. It's not going to write itself. Yeah, this is my writer's process, pretty much in four steps. First of all, you've got to create a character, your protagonist, an interesting one with a problem. And once you do that, that problem usually leads to one or more other characters with interesting problems, because if you don't have interesting characters with problems, you lose the reader.
Okay.
Then that character has to have an obstacle, something that stands in his or her way, because if not, there's no story. The reader's going to say, forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Then number three, what you need to do is you've got to flesh out your character. The character has to be 3D, three-dimensional. He's got to have layers and nuances. You have to ask yourself, what does my character need or want? What motivates my character? And then lastly, what you have to do, and this is so important, you have to craft what I call quality dramatic tension, which drives a story to its hopefully satisfying conclusion.
Climax or conclusion.
For the reader.
Okay.
So you need those four ingredients in that cake.
Okay, so let's look at Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage.
Uh-oh.
What is the tension? Is it the intimate partner violence?
Well,
I don't want you to give too much away, but enough away so that we can get a sense of what it's about.
Several strands of tension. The first is that these two guys are so attracted to one another, but they are afraid to express that because they've been burned before in the love department.
And that is so typical of black gay men.
Exactly.
I do say so myself. I know so many, and that whole sort of letting your guard down, letting your emotions
letting
show,
it
always seems to be a problem.
And then Tonio and Wes were saying, should we mix business with pleasure? You know, the whole employee-employer relationship. And then you've got the whole family issues. That's another strand there.
Mm.
You have sexual issues. That's another strand there. And then, of course, the IPVA, intimate partner violence and abuse, is the largest strand. And I don't leave the reader hanging, because when you read Rage, you'll understand why Tonio batters Wes. Something's happened to him profoundly and deeply. You can't excuse the battering, but you understand it.
Okay.
And, you know, you got to understand it to make some changes.
And I'm sure that's a key part for a reader who may be experiencing that or knows somebody who's experiencing that, either on the batterer side or the battee side, if you will. It's always interesting. It's always much more informative to go a little bit further,
right,
to try to understand what is making somebody act the way they're acting.
Exactly. And do not fast forward to the end. Take your time with it.
All right. And so are you going to share with us another excerpt?
I sure am.
Okay, good. So we'll get to that in just a minute. So let me ask a little bit more about the forum, if you will. So is Saturday or?
Right. It's Saturday, 1 p.m.
That's August 2nd?
August the 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
At the D.C. Center?
Right. Exactly. I think that's 2014th Street Northwest.
I think so. It's in the Reeves Center, the
right.
Reeves Building. Okay, and so when people come to that, you're encouraging writers and authors to come, I assume?
Oh, please. I mean, if you know, I'm always for something that's good and free. You know, this
right.
is free to the public. We definitely want the aspiring authors there, whether you are thinking about starting a book or you're halfway through or you're almost finished. Please write some questions down. You know, be prepared. You know, and this, because this is a perfect example to ask published authors
how they did it.
Absolutely.
I will give this information to my wife, who has written a great book. She's rewritten it several times, and it's hasn't been finished quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she could benefit from that, because, like you said, you want to have an end date in mind and do a little bit every day. I think that's the key to most anything that you want to be successful at.
I've had so many aspiring authors, Sheila, coming to me and saying, I don't know how to do this. I said, do you have a date? No. do you have a date? Yes. But I bypassed it. No, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be part of your life. If you really want to do this, if you really have a story to tell, you have to have a completion date. Things happen, you know, and you might not actually make that completion date. But if you have a completion date up front, that puts it in your head concretely that you are going to finish this.
And if you pass that date, I'm sure you just set another date, mm-hmm. but you always have sort of a goal, if you will.
But don't pass too many.
All right.
Exactly.
Because then it'll be sitting around collecting dust.
Yeah, 2044.
Exactly. All right, so I'm going to tell my wife, Deborah, about that. So if you had to give, you said tips mm-hmm. to aspiring authors. What about sort of advice on how to overcome the obstacles, the many obstacles that they're going to encounter?
Well, wow, Sheila, great question. First of all, you have to have a strong belief in yourself and a higher power. You've got to say to yourself, this is what I want to do. I'm going to finish this no matter what. And even before you begin and you have to choose something that you really believe. You have to choose a topic that you believe in. Thank you so much for mm-hmm. that. That speaks to you. You really have to do that. Before you begin writing, you have got to get on the promotion bandwagon. You can have the best product out there, but if nobody knows about it, it's all for naught. So you have to do the promotional thing. You've got to do that. You know, Facebook, Twitter,
Instagram.
Book clubs, everything. Because if you don't have the promotion thing in place mm-hmm. before you finish, it's going to be that much harder.
All right. All right. Well, I want to remind our listeners that they're listening to Inside Out. I am your host, Sheila Alexander Reed, and I am speaking to my guest, author, journalist, actor, entrepreneur, and motivational speaker, and voiceover.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Voiceover instructor?
Mm-hmm. I've been a voiceover instructor and talent.
So that's Wyatt O'Brien Evans, and he is talking about the upcoming Black Writers Forum and his new book, Nothing Can Tear Us Apart, Rage. You're listening to 89.3 FM, WPFW, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Bill Fletcher, host of Arise. The protection of workers' rights is essential to a just society, and WPFW is your station for jazz and justice. I urge you to support this media treasure by visiting our website at WPFWFM.org to pledge your support.
Hey dads, I want to talk to you about breastfeeding. Want to help give your newborn child a best possible start with less risk of asthma and obesity while saving over $1,200 in infant formula and decreasing mom's chance of getting diabetes and breast cancer? Well, do your part by showing your support for breastfeeding. Help mom find a knowledgeable healthcare provider. When she needs help getting started or going back to work, please let her know you're with her when she's getting those side eyes and blank stares for nursing in public. See, too many babies, especially African American ones, are missing out on something that can save their lives and improve their future. Please don't let your child be one of them. If you're not sure where to get help, contact DC Breastfeeding Coalition at 202-470-2732 or www.dcbfc.org. That's 202-470-2732. WPFW Jazz and Justice Radio is proud to honor World Breastfeeding Week, August 1st through August 7th, celebrated in more than 175 countries worldwide.
And we're back. This is Sheila Alexander Reed, and you're listening to Inside Out. As I said at the top of the hour, the DC Center is going to be hosting the annual Outright Book Festival, and that's what this show is talking about. The festival takes place August 1st through 3rd, and it draws celebrated authors from around the country and locally as well to participate in the event. And one particular celebrated author is Martin Duberman. He's headlining the event and will be reading from his new dual biography, Hold Tight Gently, Michael Callan, Essex Hemphill, and the Battlefield of AIDS. Hold Tight Gently chronicles the years before there was an effective treatment for HIV and AIDS. And I believe we have the dubious honor of having Martin Duberman on the line. You there, Martin?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I am honored and happy to have you with us. But we're enjoying a beautiful day here in D.C.
and New York.
Yeah. Oh, you're having a good one in New York too?
Yeah, it's actually cool. It feels like fall.
I like it though. Let me tell my audience a little bit more about you. Martin is a distinguished professor emeritus of history at CUNY Graduate Center. the author of more than 20 books, including a highly acclaimed biography of Paul Robeson. Duberman has won a Bancroft Prize and been a finalist for both the National Book Award and the Pulitzer Prize. And as he just pointed out, he lives in New York City. So welcome, Martin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
So you're headlining this book festival here in D.C., and I'm excited about that. I've my co-host, who's not here today, taught here in D.C., and she said that one of your books was a key element of her teaching. So I'm happy to have you on the show.
Well, thanks very much.
So tell us a little bit about Hold Tight Gently, if you will. I'll let you describe the book first, and then you can tell us a little bit about, you know, why it was so important for you to write it.
Okay. Well, as you said, the book is a dual biography, Mike Callan and Essex Hemphill. I knew both men slightly.
Okay.
But, you know, only in passing, really. But the little I saw of them those few times, I was very, very much smitten with them.
Hmm.
I got very clear messages from both of them, very, very clear positive messages. And I started by writing about Mike Callan. He was one of the very first activists in the whole struggle to get better research and better treatment for HIV sufferers. Mike was diagnosed in 1981, and he, along with a friend, Richard Berkowitz, turned out the very first safe sex poster, the first guidelines. Essex was less active directly in the struggle for better treatment and so forth. But he was enormously active as a cultural worker. Essex was a part of and really, in a real sense, the center of what has since been called the Second Harlem Renaissance, which took place right there in Washington, D.C., and characterized, well, roughly, you know, the first half dozen years of the 1980s.
I did not realize that. I mean, I knew he was, I had not heard that that phrase, the Second Harlem Renaissance, before.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it's widely current at the moment.
Awesome. Okay, so you said that you knew them in passing. So why is it that you decided to, first of all, I've never heard of a dual biography, so that sounds very ambitious and heavy in and of itself, so congratulations on that. And then why these two characters? You said that that they're both sort of active in and I guess important in their own way, but I'm sure many, many people were important. Many, many people were active. Why these two in particular?
Well, I think the fact that I did somewhat know them both was part of the decision, but also what I most wanted to do was contrast the way in which the AIDS epidemic impacted the white gay male community and the black gay male community, because I felt that the impact was very different for the two communities, and that had not really been written about very much. I don't mean, you know, entirely different, but the whole class and race dimension to the AIDS struggle, I think, hasn't been talked about enough. The recent films, I'm thinking of one in particular, I won't name them, but, you know, it's sort of a glowing portrait of the white male members of ACT UP's Treatment and Data Committee. And it glorifies them and the role they played, and that role was very important, and these men certainly deserve praise. but it doesn't comment at all on the fact that what we're dealing with is all white faces. And how come, since we know how deeply AIDS has impacted the black community, and these days it isn't only black gay men, but it's also black women.
Right.
Today, the rate of infection among black women in this country is equal to the rate of infection of women in sub-Sahara Africa.
Mm.
Again, not a fact that's widely known or written about.
Exactly. Well, and I also understand that the book sort of gives you sort of more insight as to the what was going on at the onset of the disease and what was going on in the late 80s and up to mid-90s, you know, as far as why there was no funding for treatment of the disease initially.
Yeah, in fact, very little has been written about the early years of the epidemic. A lot of people feel that, you know, the struggle for better treatment and for wider national attention came with ACT UP in 1987, but that is far from the truth. By that point, somebody like Mike Callan had been active for 6 years, and in very important ways. It isn't like, you know, he was active simply with his next-door neighbors. He operated on a national scale, but he hasn't gotten, you know, the kind of credit, and his, you know, his contributions haven't been acknowledged to anywhere like the same extent that the people who got involved with ACT UP have been acknowledged.
Sort of like Harvey Milk in San Francisco?
Well, Mike never ran for political
office. Well, I mean, he was very involved as an activist before he even became a politician.
Yeah, I would hesitate to draw that parallel, actually.
Okay. Is Mike Callan working out of New York as well?
Yes.
Okay. And so what would you say was the atmosphere at the time? I noticed 1995 or late 80s. Take us back to that time. What was going on, if you will? What was the sentiment when people were dropping left and right and there was no funding to even see what was going on and much less how to prevent it?
And in addition to the lack of funding and concern, I mean, we have to remember that President Ronald Reagan took 5 years just to say the word AIDS, and that what was going on in these early years on the floors of Congress was not a race to pass legislation to help the sufferers from this horrifying new disease that nobody knew anything about. What was going on instead were speeches by Congressman Dana Meyer and Jesse Helms saying this is God's just punishment on these evil, immoral creatures called homosexuals.
Wow. And so what...
Yeah, it was to say that the climate was hostile doesn't give a full sense, you know, of just how terrified those who became sick in the early years were, because they were being denounced from the pulpit, denounced from the halls of Congress. There seemed to be no treatment of any kind. Their friends were dying all around them and suffering horribly before they died.
Some families were probably...
And there was no light on the horizon.
Yeah, I was saying some people's families were probably pulling back from them, you know.
Very good point, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Essex, to talk about him for a minute in that regard, Essex always felt... He used to talk about home a lot in his poetry and also in his political work. And by home, he meant the black community.
Hmm.
He did not mean the gay community. For Essex, the primary emergency was the fact that he was a black man, not that he was a black gay man. He felt that his community, the black world, needed to be educated about its own gay citizens, as it were. And he also felt that such solace as was available was going to be found for black gay men within the black world, not within the white gay community. And he had a lot of very good reasons for feeling that way. I mean, as somebody, me, who was, you know, alive and well during that period and active, I know just how racist the white gay male community was. So I feel very sympathetic toward Essex and the way in which he analyzed the scene.
All right. Well, I happen to have a clip here of
Essex. Your voice has faded on me.
Can you hear me?
A little better.
All right. Something happened there in the phone connection. You still there?
Yeah. I can
okay,
barely
good.
Hear you, though.
All right. I'll try to turn up my mic. So what I have here is a poem by Essex Hemphill. I wanted to play that and just have you comment on it.
Okay. I hope I can hear it.
Okay. We'll turn it up as loud as we can.
When My Brother Fell by Essex Hemphill, written for Joseph Bean. When my brother fell, I picked up his weapons and never once questioned whether I could carry the weight and grief, the responsibility he shouldered. I never questioned whether I could aim or be as precise as he. He had fallen, and the passing ceremonies marking his death did not stop the war. Standing at the front lines, flanked by able brothers who miss his eloquent courage, his insistent voice urging us to rebel, urging us not to fear embracing for more than sex, for more than kisses and notches in our belts. Our loss is greater than all the space we fill with prayers and praise. He burned out his pure life force to bring us dignity, to bring us a chance to love ourselves with commitment. He knew the simple spilling of seed would not be enough to bind us. It is difficult to stop marching, Joseph. Impossible to stop our assault. The tributes and testimonies in your honor flare up like torches. Every night a light blazes for you in one of our hearts. There was no one lonelier than you, Joseph. Perhaps you wanted love so desperately and pleaded with God for the only mercy that could be spared. Perhaps God knew you couldn't be given more than public love in this lifetime. When I stand on the front lines now, cussing the lack of truth, the absence of willful rage and strategic coalitions, I realize sewing quilts will not bring you back. Nor save us. It's too soon to make monuments, for we are all losing, for the lack of truth as to why we are dying. Who wants us dead? What purpose does it serve? When my brother fell, I picked up his weapons. I didn't question whether I could aim or be as precise as he. and needle and thread were not among the things I found. When My Brother Fell, by Essex Hemphill.
Wow. Could you hear that, Martin?
Oh, yeah. Ah. Very moving poem.
When My Brother Fell, by Essex Hemphill. Oh, and to hear it in his voice just gave me goosebumps. And I think that that's very appropriate, because he talks about what you just said, the fact that people were dropping like flies, and for what purpose. I love the fact he talks about, you know, the whole quilt movement, and it's too soon to make monuments. Oh, that was very powerful.
Yeah, no, I agree. He wrote any number of poems that were moving and powerful. He, I think, is a too little acknowledged poet.
I agree.
I checked out a lot of the standard anthologies, and Essex is almost never represented in them. But I think he did some brilliant work. In terms of that specific poem, what he's also referencing there, he was very close to Joe Beam, who died very early in the AIDS epidemic. Joe had gotten the idea to put together an anthology of black gay male writing. There had never been such a thing. But he was struck down very early. He died, I think it was 84, it might have been 85. And Essex literally took up the cudgels, as he says in that poem.
Mm-hmm.
Joe had gotten far enough in his work to have contacted various people, and various manuscripts had arrived at his doorstep. But he hadn't made choices, and Essex put out even more feelers, gathered more material, and he actually moved in to the home of Joe Beam's parents and completed his work there. And Dorothy Beam, who was in those days, you know, black families were not, well, and white families too, needless to say,
mm-hmm.
But because the black church was strongly against homosexuality, and so many black families were deeply religious, there tended to be hostility, and not with Dorothy Beam. I mean, she stood by her son, and she welcomed Essex into her home and cooked for him so that he could complete that anthology. And it was published. It was called Brother to Brother.
Yes.
It is still in print. Many people still regard it as a pioneering work from which they draw, you know, a great deal of support and sustenance.
Well, I appreciate you giving us that insight on that piece. And as I said, I'm really excited that you're coming to town to share your book with us. I know that we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to say, what did you hope to, what do you want readers to come away with from your book?
Oh, so many different things. I hope they come away with an appreciation, primarily for these two very extraordinary individuals who are no longer with us. Two people of great talent and great human qualities, who really struggled mightily, and tragically both of them died in their mid-30s.
Hmm.
You know, they had so much good work ahead of them and so much promise. Mike was a cabaret singer, and Essex, of course, was an extraordinary poet.
Mm-hmm.
And to have been cut off that early in their lives is a deep loss for both communities.
Ooh, I appreciate that. So I want our listeners to know that you're listening to Martin Duberman, and he will be opening the Outright Book Festival here in D.C. Friday, August 1st at 7 p.m. with the reading from his new dual biography, which he's been talking about, which is entitled Hold Tight Gently, Michael Callan, Essex Hemphill, and the Battlefield of AIDS. Martin, I want to say thank you so much for taking the time to give us a call, and I look forward to coming out and meeting you on Friday.
Wonderful. I look forward to it.
All right. Well, I'll let you go. We sound like we're losing you a little bit on the air, but thanks again for calling in, and keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot. See you soon.
All right. That is our quick version of Inside Out. I'm your host, Sheila Alexander Reed. We've been talking to Arthur Wyatt O'Brien Evans, and Wyatt is going to be also at the Outright Book Festival. He's going to be moderating a Black Writers Forum on Saturday, August 2nd, 1 p.m. at the DC Center. And as you just heard, Martin's going to be at the center Friday, August 1st at 7 p.m. I'm your host, Sheila Alexander Reed. I'll see you next Tuesday at 2. And in the meantime, I want to say go out there, enjoy the sunshine. Oh, and let me thank my engineer, Michael. Thank you, Michael. Next up is the esteemed Askia Muhammad giving you the news you can use. Take care. Go out there and be positive, y'all.
Folks get brown in the sunshine. Just bees and things and flowers. Just bees and things and flowers.
This is WPFW News. I'm Askia Muhammad. Here's some headlines at the 3 o'clock hour. Mayor Vincent Gray plans to sign a bill that would ban the use of plastic foam food containers in the District of Columbia. The ban on styrofoam and similar materials is part of a larger environmental cleanup bill approved by the D.C. Council. Gray plans to sign the bill today. The district would join cities including Seattle and San Francisco that have banned plastic foam for environmental reasons. The ban will take effect starting in 2016. Meat trays in grocery stores will be exempt. The Senate is set to take up legislation to keep federal highway money flowing to states, with just 3 days left before the government plans to start slowing down payments. The House passed a $10.8 billion bill last week that would pay for highway and transit aid through the end of May 2015 if transportation spending is maintained at current levels. Under a schedule outlined by Majority Leader Harry Reid, the Senate would take up that bill today. The Transportation Department says that by August 1st, the Federal Highway Trust Fund will no longer have enough money to cover promised aid to states. Nigeria has evacuated and quarantined a hospital in the city of Lagos after a patient died from Ebola, the first reported case to reach one of Africa's most densely populated countries. Reuters reports that the patient, Patrick Sawyer, a consultant for Liberia's finance ministry, collapsed shortly after his flight landed at Lagos Airport on July 20th. He died while in treatment at First Consultants Hospital. Health officials said that doctors and nurses that came in contact with Sawyer have been isolated and closely monitored. The number of Ebola cases continues to climb in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, where the virus had infected 1,201 people and claimed 672 lives since it was first reported in West Africa in February. This according to the World Health Organization. But the emergence of the disease in Lagos, a city of 21 million people, has officials fearing a greater challenge to containment. Egyptian and Israeli officials are playing down talk of a ceasefire deal at this hour, saying that discussions are underway, but there is nothing definite yet. Meanwhile, Israel has intensified its assault on Gaza, bombing more than 150 sites, including Gaza's only power station. Palestinian health officials say more than 110 people have died the past 24 hours, bringing the Palestinian death toll to more than 1,100. 53 Israeli soldiers have been reported killed, including 10 on Monday. The United Nations has called for an immediate end to violence in the name of humanity. And it's been breezy and pleasant this afternoon. Partly cloudy tonight, low 64. Sunny with some clouds on Wednesday, high forecast to reach 83. Currently, it's partly cloudy and 74 degrees. Gloria Minot will have headlines at 3:55. Stay tuned for Mind Talk with Dr. Pamela Brewer. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington.
I am Maceo. I be blowing the soul out of this horn.